All right, we're doing the Brain Trust podcast, and I'm Adam Vass, a tabletop game designer in Grand Rapids, Michigan.
And I'm Will Yopes, tabletop game designer in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. And you're gonna die! You reminded me of Axl Rose. What do you think Axl Rose is up to right now?
Unfortunately, probably still doing that.
Doing this, doing the kind of
he's stuck in a loop.
Only Buckethead can save Axl Rose from Slash's loop curse. I'll Venmo you $10 if you can name another member of Guns N' Roses.
Duff McKagan.
Oh my god. Okay.
The bass player's name is Duff McKagan.
Okay, I'll double. Would you like to double?
No, that's all I got. Another member of Guns N' Roses. That's it. That's all I got. All right.
As I am downloading Venmo again on my phone, because it's not allowed in Canada, because, quote, banks are regulated here.
I think I know this only because Duff was on an episode of, like, Celebrity Wife Swap or something like that.
Jesus Christ. Celebrity wife swap is a phrase that hits a little sour in 2023.
Guns N' Roses as a fantasy epic is great. I mean, we really only need Buckethead, Slash, and Axl Rose. And I guess Duff McKagan as a sort of like plainclothes regular guy.
Kind of the foil for everyone.
But there is a lot of magic wizardry going on already.
You know, let's say, like, we're trying to make Chinese democracy. Like, it's on the way to the Chinese democracy record. I think it's the most challenging time for Guns N' Roses.
Yeah.
And so you just play the studio sessions. You're, like, making that Metallica documentary, but it's Guns N' Roses.
But I think it's only, like, there's no, like, element of reality to it. Because in what regular world is someone named Buckethead just chilling who wears a face mask and a KFC bucket and is like beyond like so good at guitar that he sucks, you know, like he comes back around
like fucking Paul Gilbert or like Yngwie Malmsteen, or like they're so good they're unlistenable at guitar. they just make it's like Steve Vai. They kind of just make porn music.
So it has to be like this pseudo fantasy. There's only like magic users in Guns N' Roses.
Yeah, they're all DPS. Yeah,
Guns N' Roses.
Oh god.
Let's move on.
there was
we
a lot
a trap
of
trap for ourselves here.
Yeah, I'm a little bit of a mouse trap. I'm just on the Guns N' Roses Wikipedia page, and when I tell you there are probably 30 headings on this page.
Name one member that we didn't talk about.
Okay, let's see.
I bet they have the most boring name possible.
Yeah, they do. I gotcha. You can take Richard Fortus. Richard Fortus.
Is he the drummer?
Frank Ferrer. Let's see. Richard Fortus is a guitar player. Kind of the unsung Greg Almond of the band.
Oh, the Almond Brothers.
Oh my god, wait. He was in the Psychedelic Furs. Cool. Mm. We got Frank Ferrer, who's a drummer, who drummed also for the Psychedelic Furs. And finally, Melissa Reese, who is currently in Guns N' Roses. I've never heard of this person.
Me neither. You know, it can't be easy to be the new member of a band with such
of a deadly
personalities.
Band. Yeah. a crucible style. I can't think of a worse work environment. Axl Rose, Slash, Buckethead. Yeah, damn. Slash. I listened to that That band that opened up for you, they're called, oh my god, I listen to them literally every day.
Sweet Pill?
Yes, Sweet Pill. I listen to their live album because it's amazing. They just like have an extremely good live setup.
Yeah.
And they do a part where they kind of go into a Sonic Youthian noise bit, and the guitarist plays the lick from Sweet Child of Mine in, within it. And it's the most like, fuck off. And then it's like, that was kind of cool. Like it a lot. Anyway, we are back for another episode of the Brain Trust podcast. Programming note, we are recording these ahead of schedule. So if you just listened to last episode or a few weeks ago, I have changed. I did a little costume change again, like I said. So I'm full of life, but we wanted to start by answering a question from the Brain Trust. We accept all questions here, AMA, honestly. But is there one that you particularly want to hit, or should I read one out?
Yeah, I'm offline currently, so leaving this to you.
Okay. We have one from Alfred Valley, friend of the show, who says, in a collaborative context, when Adam comes up with a not good idea, how do you handle that? And vice versa. So when one of us comes up with an idea that's not working or something like that, and this is a larger kind of how do we collaborate situation. Right. Yeah, what do you think? Oh, so Guns N' Roses, they're also known as Guns and Fucking Roses.
When,
did you know that?
When Buckethead brings a riff that Slash doesn't like, how do they communicate this?
It's like in Glengarry Glen Ross when they're like fighting for the leads, and instead the lead is like a kill switch lick that Flash refuses to learn.
No, this is a good question. Unfortunately, in the particular instance of like us teaming up, which we are in such a groove. I talked about this with you in private too, of like what it feels like to play with Brad, who's the drummer of La Dispute, who I've been playing with since I was 19, versus doing a jam with a new band for the first time. And I take for granted how on the same wavelength Brad and I are, and how like we can know what the other one will do because we've learned these patterns and like are just on this psychic level of collaboration that is untouchable, and how great that feels as a artist. That's very much how my relationship is with game design, where we both know what the other person's deal is, what they like and what they don't like, and what our goals are and how to accomplish them. So, and that's, you know, a blade that's refined over years of working together.
Definitely.
I don't necessarily have a case study or example of like how we course correct, because I think as you develop that collaboration and communication with somebody, you are doing it on like a subconscious level.
I think one thing that you said early in our collaboration that really flavored it for me and helped me, like, because it is kind of like a first date and getting to know somebody in any collaborative relationship. It's just like any other relationship, that it's about communication and it's about compromise and just being a good human being. But one thing that you said very early on, I don't know if you remember this, but it was that when we are discussing something and designing something together in like a meeting context or this like just spitballing ideas, ideas stop being owned by one of us and are instead for both of us to play with.
Yeah, they're, and this is another thing I learned hard style from songwriting, of just like, this isn't a song, or like, this isn't a game that you made and I added to, or whatever. Like, by signing up, the sort of concession that we're both making is, this is our thing, and the things that are generated within that space, whether they come from an individual brain or the collaborative brain, are still shared. And
yeah.
In a way, it kind of sound like, I don't want it to sound negative. I don't want it to sound like, in this meeting, if you have any ideas, I have like equal share to them. But by the nature of collaboration, like, you are... The whole thing with wanting to collaborate, like working with someone else instead of working on your own, is that you are welcoming in someone else's perspective and ideas. And to do that, you have to make space within your own ideas and thoughts. And that's a learned behavior too. And it is something that
is not natural. Yeah, you have to work at it. But and you have to consistently work on it. Like, it's not something you figure out and it's okay. Like, yeah. And, you know, this stuff works. This particular concept of, like, there's no stakes. Like, I don't have the stake in the idea any more than you do. And it lets us work through them together without getting any ego in the way, which is the big thing. And yeah, I watched the movie Croupier last night, and something that Clive Owen says all the time is, hold firmly and let go lightly. And so I think that's a really good idea for collaboration, that you should present and advocate for concepts and ideas. And if it turns out that they are not working in the design thinking of it, you just let it go. Like, we will come up with something else. And so when it is, I think the issues arrive when there is a either lack of communication or just a miscommunication on what something should be and where our measures are for if something's working or not working or something like that. But when we get into the more like production minded part of making games, we tend to have a strict delineation of work that we kind of plan out ahead of schedule to make sure there's not this like imbalance of someone working on something or not.
And that would another note in like successful collaboration efforts is acknowledge one another's strengths and weaknesses and like lean into those things. Like, I know as a print head that I'm going to be able to source any material good that we need. And I don't doubt your capability to do that, but the project is going to go smoother and easier if I just take care of it. And
absolutely,
we both acknowledge that, and that's how it works. And I think you're a better rules writer than I am. So on the flip side of that coin, like, I let you handle most of the sort of going from theory to written word, because the project will be better for that.
Yeah, and I think, like, you know, just to go even deeper, like, your ability in book design is just something that I strive for. So I feel like that's a little bit closer, where it's like you will take the lead on book design, but we will both art direct the book together, for example. Mm-hmm. And that feels like a really cool collaboration element. So, like, for Campfire, for example, we worked together to pick the artists that we wanted to work with, the writers that we wanted to work with, and then I handled briefing the writers and getting the content and massaging the content, and you took the writers' content for art direction for the cards. And so that was a really cool split up. We were both working really closely in different ways with freelancers, which was really cool.
Mm-hmm.
That I liked a lot. And I mean, that project itself was the long-term secret history of that project showed a lot more of our, if we weren't such strong collaborators by the point that we began that, we might not be doing this podcast. I think that if we weren't as creatively resilient and as like aware of each other as friends and human beings, and you're just my best bud, and I feel like we're tuned to a certain wavelength that
absolutely
others are not to. That,
and it's funny too, because we primarily interact online and like on the phone. Like, we've hung out like 5 times.
Yeah, countable, which, in one hand. It sucks. Which it was way more.
That's just the nature of most of our friendship developed during COVID, or like intensified during COVID, so we were in isolation. But
yeah,
that's just also the sort of nature of living in 2023 is like I have very real connections and very close friendships with people just like in the Brain Trust Discord who I've not even met.
Yeah.
And that doesn't diminish our ability to communicate and be friends and collaborate. And I think that's novel and cool because you want to like to know that I'm capable. And again, this is going like the birds in the last episode. I know how that I'm going to sound old, but just like the ability to foster that communication and connection with somebody through the internet
is great.
And that's like not something that's like, again, not a natural thing. And especially in like modern era where everybody's busy, everyone's doing their shit and like can be really easy to, it's more difficult to like foster those connections and friendships, especially as you get older. It's a testament to our ability as collaborators and the like strength of our friendship that we are as close as we are and are as good at working together as we are without
having because it's not always like that
real life.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we've both been in situations where we are doing a project with a friend that we haven't done a project with, and then it's a disaster for like several reasons, and it makes me super not take you for granted and our working relationship for granted because it's so nice and easy breezy. And I feel like a big part of it is like we don't have like heavy pressure to produce stuff together right now, and it feels like we can wait for the right concept and the right opportunity and then step into, you know, how we worked on Campfire together or games like that. Or, you know, I like that a lot. I like just if the schedules line up and we're like, okay, it's time to make Legendary Journey and we can just step into it and figure it. I have confidence that we will figure out an equitable relationship to make something happen. And it's just nice. There's no, I don't feel like there's any pitfalls waiting or anything like that because we, the hard lessons that both of us have learned have often been together and not due to one another.
Yeah.
And so it feels like a little bit of like foxhole friends in that.
Forged in fire. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I'm curious because I think this is something you, so to expand on the collaborative relationship, I do think a lot of what you said of it's just like any other relationship that requires fostering and listening and ego reduction and all those things. How does that play when you have more than one collaborator? I don't know that. So in music, obviously I'm used to having a full band, but in games, I've never really worked with more than one person, except for when you hire freelancers, and that's kind of a different, that's a different thing.
So let's see. I think that as far as the game projects I've worked on, where there are, you know, N plus one collaborators, I'm usually in the freelance context as an editor. So I exist within like a very specifically defined set of roles and permissions. And so that might be a way to help, in that where you just like closely, you make it clear the things you care about. Oh, I mean, this is huge actually.
Yeah. This is a great point. Cause this is something I meant to say earlier and forgot, of just like establishing foundation. And it's something that we don't have to explicit. We don't do now because we're so used to working together, but like early on we would, of just like, what is this project's goal? And what is my role in facilitating that goal? And especially as a freelancer, that is very explicit because they're usually told by the project
runner,
the project manager, like, this is your role and this is like kind of the extent of it. But and
usually on my side, it's usually in a British accent too. So, yeah.
But there's something to even just, I had a meeting with a friend this week about a game that we're working on together. And the first thing was, what do you want this thing to be? Or like, what do you expect this thing to be? And
that's so good.
It's different than the three game design questions of like what do players do, what do characters do, and how do they do those things. It is what do you as the game designer want out of this? And
what do you want to get out of this experience?
Not just what do you want this game experience to feel like, but what do you want the collaboration to be? What do you, how involved are you wanting to be or able to be? Just getting up front with those qualifiers does so much to protect yourselves later on and establish the track that you're on for just good vibes.
Absolutely. And I think one part of that to continue on, like maintaining this, because at the beginning of the project, there's lots of things you can do to ensure that you're both going in on the best foot, or the group of you are going in on the best foot. But during the project, when decisions have to be made on things, it's very good to keep a running conversation with yourself about the things you know you care about, the things you know you don't care about.
Yeah.
And just to let those things you don't care about, that you have the trust that your collaborators will do a good job making that thing or contributing to that thing.
Right.
And for the things you do care about, advocating for it. And you can, so for example, say you are making a role-playing game and you have big ideas about how driving should work in the game, but you do not care about the chase rules, for example. Just making that clear that, like, my goal here is to make this and I am advocating for these ideas because of this, to have that be front of mind, so you know when you can just put your hands up and say, like, that's all you, take it, I like that idea, go forward. You know, because you can change, you can be a stick in the mud on every single piece of the creative process, or you could decide to flow as water and make the key decisions that are actually important to make, if that makes sense.
For sure. Yeah, because you'll get lost in the weeds quickly without that self-awareness.
In college, I did a co-op for one semester. So I went to a school where you do these co-ops, where you just go work for a semester rather than doing school. Love working, love to produce capital. And one of those was a grant-funded video game that I was going to do narrative design for. And it was really difficult. I had a really tough time because I wanted to advocate for all of my ideas and to strongly have a vigorous discussion about the elements going in the game and the elements not, because I felt like I want to do a great job and I want my mark to be made on something, whatever it is. And I was working with a creative direction team that were horrible communicators for lots of reasons, and one was this really terrible feedback process that scarred me and made me like really think about all of this stuff. And if you want I'd say for anybody listening and really interested in seeing kind of the crucible of collaboration and how to get better, which is my perpetual goal, check out the Double Fine Psych Odyssey documentary on YouTube. If you have ever worked on something creative with another person, you're going to get something out of this really great documentary series about the making of Psychonauts 2 and what it is like to make things with other people. It will like show you every single idea that Adam and I are talking about and show you in situation what's going well. How is this going badly? How do they fix issues in the creative process during the creation of something? Which is the hardest part of all of this. It's just super, right. Super worth checking out.
Yeah, everything, it's easy up front to feel like you're in a good spot and have a good communication. But once work has begun, things can shift whether you're paying attention to them or not. And so it is good to just be mindful in that way. And to be open in conversation to address those things when they arise.
Yeah, like one of those things, when you get into the production world, when things need to happen by certain dates, having someone be the schedule meister and being honest with your ability, time, and frankly, interest in the project with this person. So like for Campfire, that was you, because there were tons of production elements going in. Mm-hmm. And so we worked backwards from the date we wanted it out and then scheduled all the production stuff. And then we knew here's the date that the manuscript has to happen. And so Adam was on the production side. I was on the writer side, working with the writers, getting the game into a manuscript form, and getting all the content in. And we were able to do it to scope and to spec because I think both of us are good at this kind of stuff, but also that we are very cognizant of the schedule, knock-on effects, and how to manage our individual processes in a way that worked well. And it's easy for me to say, like, the trick to project management is to do a good job. But when, because lots of stuff goes weird, and you know, we could sit here and talk about like how to be a good art director and how that saves you a billion hours of time if you do it in a good way, or how to have a set process of feedback and review so both of us are on the same page about every major gate of design without holding stuff up. I think that's another thing we do well, which is like with Discord Ghosts, it became a strong good luck side project where I led the revision of the game, but you were there during every stage of approvals and rules development and things like this, and your feedback implemented directly into the book.
Yeah. But it was also recognizing that like this doesn't work with my schedule and I can't be a 50-50 partner in it, so being upfront and honest about that, recognizing the workflow that came as a consequence of that, and then you taking that information and amending the production timeline and the sort of just everything timeline around that suited the project such that it could be done in a timely manner and correctly.
Yeah, I think something that I am more focused on as I spend more of my life making games and books is that as important to me of as the result is, like, I want the result to be great, but if I did not have a great time in the process, then the result was not worth it.
For sure.
So I want the process to be as open and honest and as unpainful as possible, because that will help me make something better and sell something better.
Yeah, and there's nothing like trying to pitch a game to a distributor or something that you don't fucking care about, or that like makes you feel bad, filled with regret. That's gonna come through in your pitch.
This game I basically killed myself over, so does anybody want it? It's a game that has pages and page numbers.
You better
numbers.
Fucking like it, because it ruined me.
Because it becomes a thing, I'm sure we both have things like this, where if someone likes something that you made under duress or struggled to make, you don't forget the struggle that it took.
Yeah, and they don't know.
Even when receiving compliments.
They don't know, like, or care, as a, like, because they're not privy to the process. And,
yeah.
And in a way, it makes you resentful of them. Like,
yeah.
Oh, you like this game? Must be nice to have like a pure experience around this game that I don't fucking like anymore.
And I think we both now know the absolute joy of someone digging your game and you also being a fan of your game.
Yeah.
It is the spice of life. That's why we're doing it, basically.
Yeah, you want... It is that weird thing that happens because we're making art as a product, that you want your artistic voice in it and you want it to feel artistically, creatively validated. And part of that is the conversation of the piece with the audience. And that conversation is not limited to purchase. It is a conversation. Like, you want that feedback and you want that interactivity. And that's what is going to give you that artistic satisfaction in a lot of ways. So the best thing you can do to foster that is to be excited about the thing that you made in the first place. Like, it has intrinsic value as an art project, that it has extrinsic value as this interactive object. And either one of those on their own are nice, but almost unsatisfactory. Like, you need the hybrid of extrinsic and intrinsic satisfaction for it to be feel like a success.
Right. And you never lose whatever scars you earn during burnout from a project.
Right.
Like, you, first of all, burnout is like debatably something you can recover from, period. Just putting that out there. But you can manage it and mitigate it. And in a collaboration, it is communicating to your partner or partners what is going on with you and how the work is coming, and not letting any group project itis like infect the project. And that both means, like, there's going to be situations in which you're collaborating with somebody and you just have to pick up the ball and take it over the finish line because someone disappears or some stuff happens like that. And the only thing you can do is not take it personally. Do what you need to do to get it done, whether that means more time, smaller deliverable, stuff like that. And then just reevaluating, is this a collaboration I'm interested in continuing? Sometimes it totally is, and sometimes it doesn't make sense to.
Yeah, and I don't think... I was going to say it's not often personal. It can be personal, but it's like because we're making personal things. But yeah, that's totally not a fault of character, I don't think, to care about your thing more than someone else does, or finding that correct level of how much one should care or can care about something. It's not often related to you as much as it is to them, you know, or, you know, again, like with Discord Ghosts Expanded, it had nothing to do with the game itself or our team up that I couldn't do it. And so it was just, and I think you recognize that, and you, that allowed you to forge ahead without feeling guilt in some way. Cause you know, like sometimes when you are collaborating and it's like, I got an idea, I got a spark and I'm trucking away at this, not only are you going to be leaving the other person behind, but you're going to be, you could grow resentment of like the amount of work that you're doing that no one's asked you to do.
Yeah. God damn, that's right.
So, yeah, I think...
You're scamming yourself by doing that. Like,
don't scam
you're
scamming
yourself.
You scammed
don't scam
yourself.
Yourself. Brain Trust 2023. Don't scam yourself.
But
yeah. And I think, like, when approaching new collaborators, just come openly and honestly and expect good things to happen. And I think that, like, you know, going in positively, if not, like, first date style trepidatiously, feeling someone out, do we think this is going to be great? Yeah, and for collaborations that involve moolah and scratch and clams, sometimes things are too good to be true.
It's funny because I was like, how do I acknowledge this on the show in an honest way? But we aren't very good at that. But only because I think neither of us super care. Like, it's just like we both just are like, yeah, that sounds fair. That's cool. To the point where we're not doing like accounting work. Which I think I might actually recommend for other people. But I think it comes down to just like the nature of our relationship. And I personally don't have any kind of beef. Like, we both have the projects that we work on more.
Yeah.
The cost of assembling and making and doing all that stuff. And then just sort of the admission of like, yeah, I'm good with that. Which is cool, but not something I would recommend to other people.
Yeah. It's not ultimately sustainable.
Right.
And like, I feel like if there's, you know, when there's another one that goes on crowdfunding or whatever, we're going to take all of these lessons that we're talking about and then also try and both make a buck doing it.
For sure. And that's the
that would be cool.
That's the dream, right? Like the all this work, all the teamwork, again, has this intrinsic and extrinsic value. And the intrinsic value of collaboration is usually that spark of working with somebody, that excitement that comes with it, and the ideas that you would not have ever come up with on your own. The extrinsic value in this instance would be getting paid for those ideas.
Right. And that's not to say we don't think about that stuff, because with our itch releases, we usually switch off who is the one having the game on the website, for the example. Or like for something like Discord Ghosts, we have an agreement where Adam gets as many at cost copies of the book as they want, like to sell and live off of.
Yeah.
So
we're not completely laissez-faire, but there is like a fluidity to it that's almost based on the project itself of like,
yeah,
you know, something like RP Genie that probably made like $9. We're not going to do accounting for. But something like Discord Ghosts that goes accidentally viral, like, I guess we should pay attention and at least be mindful of what we are doing and how is it fair. And
yeah, and how do we what, like, when something is like Discord Ghosts, when it can be something bigger, how do we go into that as collaborators?
Mm-hmm. To go back to what we were talking about earlier, or maybe last episode, is acknowledging the scope of the project, and that is its own thing when you get into collaboration too. It's like making sure you're honest with yourself, and when there are other people involved, making sure that they agree and that they're honest with themselves and with you, that you know, is it something that you just throw up on itch for funsies? Is it something that is going to require more work or more investment of resources?
And I think one, we're dancing around this situation we had with a client project that went really badly. And I think my proudest collaborative moment with you is when we quit.
Yeah.
And, like, that was really hard to do. And getting to the point where we could have the conversation and make the choices, like, really spoke to our strength as friends and collaborators and advocating for ourselves.
Yeah. And that's not, that's not easy. But it was made easier by the fact that it was like a conversation that I think we both wanted to have and didn't know how to approach or deal with. And then once we did, it was very clear that we were thinking the same things without voicing them. And that made it a lot easier, because then you don't feel that alone. You don't feel that like worry or you are a team, you know. It's easy to forget that when it gets into bigger project territory.
Yeah, and, you know, real winners quit, okay? Hit the bricks. Yeah, so that's how you collaborate. You meet Adam Vass.
I said to my friend that I was meeting with this week that, like, there's something magical about going to games events, or like, was it Origins or Gen Con where we met for the first time?
It was at the Zine meetup in Gen Con,
where there was six people, because the thing with, and granted, I think something like that, well, that was, I'm getting on so many like little tangents, but that was before the word zine became tainted as much as it was. So like, it was like, again,
pre-zine quest,
not to gatekeep, but it was true zinesters.
We are real ones.
But that's like the cool thing about events like that, is there's going to be thousands of people there. And if you're lucky, you will find your people who are freaks like you in the ways that you're a freak.
Yeah.
And like, I remember meeting Banana Chan at Origins because I was leaving some party that I didn't want to be at, and I was talking about like, oh, I just, like, I'm here working for another publisher. I just make these little like sad zines about going to a funeral or whatever. And that was something that like piqued her interest, and we became friends really quickly. And then she introduced me to other people who were similarly like weird emotional game makers. Nice. That I probably wouldn't have been able to figure that out or find that, because I was diminishing my own value as a creator because I was not on the scale of these game publishers, you know?
Yeah.
But once I met the weirdos, I had the best time. And like,
yeah.
Same with meeting you at Gen Con. It's like, yes, this is an industry thing, and it is very industry-minded. And with that comes a lot of ick. That yeah. Once you find that person that you are similar to or care about in things in similar ways, like, you're going to have a good time. And just, I know it's easier said than done to find your people in those communities, but whatever you can do to foster those things. And I think the Brain Trust Discord is a great example of that too, of like, yes, we work in this wider industry and there are all these things under this umbrella, but the people who engage with and the people who we connect with in there are real people who really care about the similar things that we care about. And we all have very different backgrounds and very different perspectives and philosophies and stuff. And that is also like some of the perk of collaboration, is getting exposed to those things. But yeah, whatever you can do to foster community within your own, like, real at who your real self is going to elicit collaboration with people that you connect with in a genuine way.
Yeah. And like, if you're sitting here listening to this being like, wow, I would love to collaborate with people, how do I find them? What do I look for in a collaborator? I would say look for people right around your level, experience, and interest in games or in whatever, or if one perceived level lower than you or something like that. So horizontally network. Don't, you know, ladder climb and go for the big name. People are doing the same thing as that. They are looking for people around them who they're interested in working with, who they want to have relationships with. And so finding those horizontal relationships, whether it's, you know, we both make zines or we both make fighting games, whatever it is, those are going to be the relationships that you want to nurture and take with you.
For sure. This was kind of a one fell swoop, good, informative episode.
Yeah, we have to have one every few months so people can be like, you should listen to the Brain Trust. And then they...
And then, yeah, next episode like, is going to be about, like, would you rather... Would you rather eat moldy bread or moldy cheese?
Or frigging shit on a toilet. You know, we did start the episode by naming all of the current members of Guns N' Roses. So I think that's a good sign that we have said what we want to say today. Thank you again to Alfred Valley for the question. Check out House of Valley for all of Alfred's extremely neat games. I know you have been reading Lay on Hands recently.
I love Lay on Hands. It is a really interesting post-apocalyptic solo adventure game. Just the way it's written and the stuff that's in the zine is so cool. The Oracle is really... There's like a spin a coin on this grid, and where the coin lands and whether it's heads or tails determines like how you interpret the Oracle and continue your adventure. I love it. I'm going to be playing it on stream soon, and by the time this is out, it'll probably already have happened. But as part of my ongoing solo adventure game research and studying, I'm just going to be playing some on my twitch.tv/worldchampgameco. But Lay on Hands is like top of my list right now. I read it like 2-3 times through yesterday because I would walk away from it and then go back to the Discord and someone would say something about it. I'd be like, I got to read it again and I want to read it again. So I'm very excited to get my hands dirty with that one.
Alfred's work is extremely mystical in this way that like... It feels like I am tapping into an unknown world every time I open up one of Alfred Zane's or games. Thousand Empty Light, I'll recommend as a solo mothership zine adventure game. It is meticulously crafted in a way that feels like you are opening up this combination manual / scrapbook / experience that is just gorgeous. Check out all of Alfred's stuff. Thanks for the question, Alfred.
And why don't you go ahead and check out our stuff? What a segue.
when you're done. My website, where can people find you?
Worldchamp.io to get all the print stuff. At this time, I'm probably on tour, and so I'll ship it when I get home, but you can still place the order. And all my digital stuff, worldchampgameco.itch.io. And back me on Patreon, because when tour's over, I'm going to get back to shipping some zines out and some... I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what's going on over there. Patreon.com/worldchampgameco to get some of my small press and experimental and weirder stuff. How about you, Will?
I am Will Yobst. You can find all my games where Will's games are sold. That is where you should go to get them. You can find Alfred's games at House of Valley. I literally have one of Alfred's business cards here, Dodd Man, Diviner of Odd Domains, and it's a super cool business card that is a coin-flipping little game. It's so cool. But anyway, Discord Ghosts is available on goodluckpress.co. It'll be at IPR. It'll be at Adam's store. Literally buy it wherever you fucking want. I just want you to check it out. There's probably some community copies still available. Go check it out. This game is huge and cool. And yeah, get haunted. Seb's epistolary horror experience called Curios, the Albrecht Manor is probably... available. It's available for pre-order at the Good Luck Press stores. It's goodluckpress.co. And on there, are you okay?
Frankie is on the other side of this wall doing God knows what, and I'm like,
oh my God.
I know we're at the end, so I'm just letting it happen for a minute, but he's causing terrorism in the next thing.
All right, well, Frankie goes literally wild. Come hang out with the Braintrust Discord and see you soon. Brain emoji, handshake emoji.